Hey everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
Continuing our ongoing remake series, we are comparing the animated 1961 101 Dalmatians and the live action 1996 101 Dalmatians.
Yep.
Spoiler alert, there's a lot of Dalmatians.
There's a lot of Dalmatians. There are, in fact, more Dalmatians than you would think.
Yeah.
Even based on the titles of these movies, there are many Dalmatians. Yeah, so we're back to Disney live-action remakes with the OG Disney live-action remake that people forget because people say that, I think, Cinderella was the first. But that was like 20 years after this one. So, yeah, the original Disney live-action remake, 101 Dalmatians.
Fair enough. Where do you want to start? Because I was going to say that the live-action movie mm-hmm. took away a lot of the charm, and there are some standout performances. Glenn Close's performance is so iconic, deranged, beautiful, scary, all the objectives. No, sorry. as you could get for a villain.
Yeah. And a lot of that was her being like, why isn't she scary enough in the script? I'm gonna make her scarier. Glenn Close committed everything to this film and did an incredible job.
And the disappointing part is she acts circles around everybody else. And it's funny to me because of, I think, the popularity of the TV show House.
Mm.
I was going to say Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie is... I forgot he was, like, started off in comedy.
Blackadder and stuff.
Yeah.
House is comedy, though, kind of to an extent as well, right? Well, it's dramedy.
It's a sub-reality drama.
Yeah.
I forgot he was in comedies, and then watching him in this movie, and his over the top, and it's the same with the guy who played, I can't remember the actor's name, the guy who played
Mark Williams.
Yeah, Mark Williams.
Played Arthur Weasley.
Yeah.
/ Horace.
Yeah, it's
he really annoyed me in this film.
Honestly, both of them irritated me.
I mean, Hugh Laurie has, like, some amount of charm.
Yeah.
That he drags himself out of the mud on in this film.
A little bit,
but,
yes.
But Mark Williams was like, I was like, was he always this terrible?
It was the scene for me when they both fall on the electric fence.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just making silly faces.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, that would have been really fun to film, but on film it looks awful.
I had a weird thought in the middle of watching the kind of hijinks with Horace and Jasper, where I was like, oh, this is like Home Alone, but for kids. And then I remembered Home Alone is for kids.
Yeah.
So this is just like, it's like if someone was making Home Alone and forgot that kids can be intelligent.
Yeah.
But then again, I enjoyed these movies as a kid. And it's weird because I hadn't seen them. I don't think I've seen either of these movies since childhood. They're both movies that I watched quite a bit in childhood. And we talked about I saw 102 Dalmatians in cinema. I think I had like mushed them into one film in my head. Like, for example, I was surprised that Cruella in the animated film isn't Anita's boss and doesn't have a fashion industry. Wait, I thought that was her whole shtick, but that's just in the remake.
Yeah.
That was a bed for that. But also, yeah, I did think that's something that we'd probably talk about a lot today, is that the live-action remake is more cartoonish than the animated film.
Yeah.
Which feels like a weird statement to make.
There are certain aspects of the live-action one that I think are genuinely, like, more interesting and sort of the world they're building, because, like, they're both set in London, you know, despite time period and, you know, the fact that they can just apparently move whenever they want, even though they're, like, allegedly both broke, kind of.
I don't know. That happens in both movies, that they're like, we're broke, we've got no money. It's like, but you can afford a full-time housekeeper.
Yeah.
And also, like, when you have 15 puppies, you're like, oh, it's fine, we'll keep them, we'll raise these 15 puppies. And then when 84 more puppies show up, you're like, that's no problem.
We'll just buy
a bigger house and live there with all our puppies. It's like, where are you getting this money?
I do like the fact that I cannot remember the actual character's name anymore.
Roger,
thank you. Their creativeness is still portrayed both ways. Jeff Bridges is a video game designer.
Jeff Bridges, sorry. He's not even in the movie. Jeff Daniels
is a video game designer, and the original Roger, the animated Roger, is basically making jingles or music.
Yeah, he's like a jazz composer.
Yeah, and I love how they both take Cruella in and put them into their media, and that's what makes them famous.
Yeah, they get successful off her name. Yeah.
But I think the biggest takeaway, because obviously it doesn't work in live action, and the weird CGI that we're doing to the dogs' faces to give them like cartoonish expressions was a little bit uncomfortable, because it's a sort of that uncanny valley of like kind of borderline the live action Scooby-Doo movies.
I do think that they made the right decision in not having the dogs talk.
Correct, because Look Who's Talking Now is a very bizarre movie.
There are a lot of talking animal movies, and they do them in different ways. Like, some of them have, like, just real animals where they put peanut butter in their mouth or something, and others, you know, CG on a mouth.
Milo and Otis, really weird. Long Way Home. Long Way Home? I think that's a movie.
I don't know. I don't know the movie.
Babe.
Yeah, and Babe, they just like, let them use their normal faces and put a voiceover over it. Like, make just Hugo Weaving talking over a cheat dog.
I do feel that because the animals talk and they're sort of the actual main characters in the animated movie, I feel this appeals more towards, like, involving children rather than just klutzy humans doing klutzy human things and then the stories about the dogs.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, It's like they're trying to make two different movies at the same time in the remake. It's written by Chris Columbus, who wrote Home Alone. And to some extent, I feel like for part of that movie, he was just like trying to cash in on being the writer of Home Alone again.
Yeah, a little bit.
Where you have the dogs, Kevin McAllistering Horace and Jasper through the DeVille mansion. And it's a weird... It's just weird. It's just strange. And it's not funny in the way that Home Alone is, and it's not inventive in the way that Home Alone is. And the dog's not actually setting this stuff up. The dog's just barking at them, and then they stumble into stuff. Whereas obviously Home Alone works because it's this little kid being like, well, I'm the man of the house and I have to defend it, and so I'm gonna do it. And you're like, oh my
don't
god,
get scared now.
Whereas in this, you know, it's just a puppy being annoying and these guys being so idiotic that they're just doing this to themselves?
It does get that way. Yeah. I think the two henchman characters in the animated one are a little bit more menacing. Mm. They still have that sort of slapstick back and forward, you know, what you expect. But I feel like they're more menacing in the animated versus the live action, because, again, like I said, they're just pulling silly faces and falling through walls and stuff.
Because
Mr. Skinner's not in the...
In the animated one, it's they're going to do the job. Yeah. So, this is a child-friendly episode, and these movies are suitable for children, but we are going to talk about the scary bit. Because they do plan to kill the dogs.
Yeah.
And it is more menacing in the animated one. Because from everything we've seen of Horace and Jasper in the live action, they're bumbling messes.
Yeah.
They haven't noticed all these dogs disappearing. You know, they don't know anything that's going on. And we don't believe that they have the capacity to do this.
Yeah.
In the animated version, it feels like, oh, these guys are really going to do that.
Yeah.
These are like, because they're just like two random useless goons in the live action. But in the animated one, you know, they have a criminal record. Yeah. And they have, and they're watching a, which was really weird, a parody version of What's My Line called What's My Crime.
Yeah.
And they know the guy who's on there who's been arrested for a violent crime. So, you know, so there's this whole kind of aura around them where you're like, oh, these guys are career criminals, and they might not be the smartest career criminals, but that actually makes it more frightening in some ways, because they're just, they don't actually care. They're just going to do what they're told.
Yeah.
And kill these puppies. And you believe that they're actually going to do it. So it makes them like, and there's, and you know, and also that there's that kind of time frame where like, they're, you know that they're going to do it as soon as they finish watching this show.
Because
they set that up, that Quirrell says, do it now. And they're like, okay, well, you know, we can just finish watching the show and then we'll kill them.
Yeah.
Whereas in the live action remake, she's not even telling them to do it. She's sending someone to do it. And then they're like, ah, oh, let's just do it. Yeah. And it just happens to be after the dogs are gone.
Yeah, because they're waiting for Mr. Skinner, who's the character from the live action, who apparently had also recently broken into a zoo and stolen, poached a Siberian tiger.
And skinned it alive at the zoo, I think, is what's implied.
Yeah.
That they found the dead tiger at the zoo, which is very sad.
Poaching is bad.
Cruella is menacing in both.
Yes. I just feel Glenn Close's portrayal is just so much better.
Than anything else in that movie.
Pretty much, yeah. I feel like if they'd picked a different actor to play Cruella, or she hadn't literally acted her heart out and just really brought a lot to the screen, I think the movie would be one less in basically the mind of every child who's ever seen this movie, but also just worse and much more forgettable, to the point where we probably wouldn't be doing this episode based on it.
Yeah.
Because it would just be like, oh, terrible cash-in remake aimed at children, nothing spectacular, you know, move on. Yeah, exactly. You're hitting all the points there. I'm literally struggling to add to any of that. It's perfectly done.
I do think the human owners deserve more credit in the remake than in the original.
So Pongo's mission to find Roger, as he says it, a mate, a partner. And, you know, Pongo and the animator are sitting outside, staring out the window while Roger's working. And he's, like, basically perusing dogs with their owners. And it's very funny because all the owners look like the dogs and the dogs look like the owners. There's only sort of one little, like, part to that, I think, in the live-action one, which was, like, the British bulldog.
Mm.
And the guy in his military dress uniform with all his medals on, which is ludicrous. Knowing that the bad guys were doing the bad guy thing because the dogs can talk to each other. Pongo, I think, in the animated is just, because obviously it's an animated, you can put voices on dogs. His plan is so much more cute in a devious kind of way. How he gets the two of them to interact is far more fun.
Mm.
I feel like Pongo in the live action is just like, cool, I'm going to slapstick comedy all the way across this park by dragging a bicycle and then throwing you into the water and then hiding by the lady I want you to meet.
Mm.
And I feel like just wrapping them up in the
yeah, wrapping them with the lead is
yeah,
just
yeah.
cute.
And then they both fall in the water is a little bit more cute. And I think taking that away from the live action movie makes it worse, not better. Like changing it.
I think that also though is something that might be difficult for them to get the dog to do, maybe. But then again, no, because I've had dogs just like where you wrap around your legs and you're like trying to untangle the lead. So you can do it.
Yeah.
What didn't make sense to me is that, like, he gets them to have the meet cute and then Perdita also just, like, afterwards does the same thing to Anita and throws her in the water. It's like, that. Why was that necessary? And then literally he Roger proposes to her on the same day.
Yeah, that's a little bizarre even for 96.
But anyway, what I was referring to was like in the search for the puppies.
Yeah.
Because in the in the animated version, they just like they talk to police or whatever, and then they're just like, oh well, puppies are gone, and then you know Roger jokes about it being Cruella, and Anita's like, no, it's not her, and then they just sit there and they're fine, and then Pongo and Perdita run away, and then they're like, oh, I guess those dogs ran away.
Yeah.
And then they all show up. They're like, oh my gosh, they're back and they brought puppies. Whereas in the remake, like you see them actively like trying to figure out what happened. And, you know, and then they try to chase after Pongo and Perdita when they run off. And, you know, you have Anita having the moment where she's like, oh my gosh, I think it is Cruella. Because she wanted this, you know, she wanted this fur cloak and she joked about wearing my dog. And, you know, and they call, she gets the police involved and gives them that tip. And then they raid Cruella's house and find the dead Siberian tiger skin. You know, and like there's a whole back, like a whole side story where the humans are actually following proper channels and doing some deduction and trying to figure out what happened to the puppies. To the point that then, like, how the puppies get back to the house is actually that the police are out searching that area and find them. So the humans are doing a better job at actually caring about their dogs.
Being human. I think for the animated is because, like, I feel like usually in movies, the first person to talk is the main character.
Right.
And
it's Pongo.
It's Pongo, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really the story of the Dalmatians and the humans are just in the background.
And it's a funny little joke opening as well, that it's, you know, showing it in the window of Pongo and Roger and be like, oh, there I am with my pet.
Yeah.
And blah, blah. And he's like, oh, you know, he's he's quite a charming pet. And he's like, he loves to do his music. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's me with the spots, of course. So it's very...
So obviously 96 CGI, very bad. Certain stages are just like, wow. The fact they obviously didn't find, X amount of puppies. Did they actually?
Yeah, that's why I was joking that there's way more dogs involved than you think. Because they had like double the amount that they needed.
How do they get 200 Dalmatians? I don't barely see a Dalmatian per year, let alone 200 of them in one place.
No, the dogs are real. I think I took down... Why does it look they had 230 puppies and 20 adults playing the dogs.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's nuts. That's actually nuts.
Yeah. There's a lot of Dalmatians. There's a lot of donations in that movie.
Why do the image look combed together though?
I didn't think the image looked combed together.
Okay.
There's lots of dogs. There's a lot of dogs, and they're clearly all real dogs, and all have different like spots and things.
Yeah.
And I do think that like because obviously
the ones with names.
Yeah, I was gonna say the ones with names is funny because they're different to the names in the except for Lucky, they're different to the ones in the animated version. But I think that's because like you're not gonna have Patch who has the big patch around his eye. And Rolly, who's the one that's twice as fat as the rest of them.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, you're not going to have that with the real dogs. But they had the one that had the black tail, and they called him Dipstick.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember, there's one that had like one black ear, one white ear. I can't remember what they called it.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
But it was, you know, some reference to that
physical
appearance. So they obviously had a couple of dogs. Two-tone,
and Wiz was the one that was peeing on things.
Yeah. So they had some names based on... you know, traits of the actual puppies that they got. But yeah, they did have 230 real Dalmatian puppies.
There's so many puppies.
Yeah.
I
guess maybe there were some at different stages in life as well, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because they obviously had the teeny tiny puppies. At least one teeny tiny puppy.
The point I was making is the CGI is terrible, and I don't think it was even good for that era where they're just, like, doing... you know, things that would be actually cruel to animals to do to them.
Yeah. Like, the most obvious is when the dogs go down the pipe off the roof of the house, and it's the most obvious CGI I've ever seen, maybe. Well, no, probably, I know, I've seen some terrible CGI.
The actual backgrounds in the animated are so gorgeous. Oh,
they're so beautiful. From the first frame. I think that's the first note I took down. Was just like, I literally wrote, look how beautiful and artistic this is. Just that opening shot of, like, London houses, and that's just this, like, watercolor and pencil drawing. Is absolutely beautiful. And the whole style of it is lovely. Yeah, really beautiful film. What are you awing?
Sorry, I was reading the controversy of the live-action movie.
What?
Basically, because of the popularity of the movie, a bunch of children begged their parents for Dalmatians, and they went and bought them, not understanding how hard Dalmatians are to look after. And
a lot of Dalmatians ended up being put back in shelters and being put down.
Yeah.
That is not just the live action. That happened after the release of both films.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's the same with Clownfish, though.
Right? Yeah. Finding Nemo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happened. There was a huge surge in the amount of Dalmatians adopted after the first, or not necessarily adopted, bought after the first, after the original movie was released. And then it happened again with the remake. It's not the history you want to repeat.
No.
People not realizing how difficult they are to actually care for.
Yeah, dogs are a full-time commitment.
You really got to know about the particular breed that you're getting as well.
Yeah, that's why designer breeds are so prolific. They're almost borderline prolific these days. It's very hard to go into a store and buy. Like, you'd have to go to a special, like, finding a registered breeder and stuff like that, and to find a, purebred dog.
You just said they're prolific.
No, I'm saying the designer dogs are.
That means they're everywhere.
Yeah, the designer dogs are. The ones that are, like, crossbred to have, like, certain traits of other dogs, usually just, like, yappy little lap dogs with, like, hypoallergenic fur, and they don't shed.
I mean, hypoallergenic fur is a bonus.
Yes.
As someone who is allergic to dander,
yeah.
and lived with a half husky, half malamute, a lot of sneezing happening in that household. if her fur had been hypoallergenic, it would have been a blessing. Not that it made me love her any less.
Yeah.
She's a beautiful dog.
She is a beautiful dog.
Another breed that is very difficult to care for. You gotta know what you're doing.
Because she was adopted. How many times before Forever Home?
I think she had 14 failed adoptions.
That's crazy.
And she was essentially, this was her last chance.
Yeah.
And she was in a rescue place and would cry all the time because she's a dog that needs to be out getting a lot of exercise.
Yeah.
So she'd be crying all the time, and their solution was to just keep feeding her, just make her stop crying, which meant that she was a 40-kilogram dog who should have been under 35. So she was a barrel of a dog.
My favorite story by far out of all the stories about Lulu is the chocolate story.
Oh, where the cookies that I made?
Yeah.
So I baked myself some vegan chocolate chip cookies. And when they were straight out of the oven, I put them on a plate to let them cool. And I was like, this dog is big and can, like, get things that are right at the edge of the counter. So I put it on the kitchen island right in the center of it where I knew she couldn't reach them. And I covered them with tinfoil to be doubly sure. And then I was in the other room and I heard a rustling noise. And I came out and she had managed to get her head up onto the counter. So she was standing on her back legs and had her head sideways on the counter. So her nose still wasn't reaching the plate. So what she'd done was she was just flopping her tongue out. And had knocked the tinfoil off and was just licking these cookies. And I panicked because I know that chocolate is toxic to dogs. And I called an emergency, like, pet health line. It wasn't an emergency vet, but it was like an after hours health line for pets. And I was like, hey, I don't know enough about dogs, but I know that toxic is bad. And this dog has eaten some toxic. Oh, sorry. Yeah. What did I say?
You're toxic is bad.
Yeah, toxic is bad for dogs. Chocolate is toxic for dogs. And they were like, okay, how much chocolate did she eat? And I gave like an estimate, and they were like, okay, that might not be so bad. What size is she? And I was like, they were like, what weight is she? And I was like, 35 kilograms. They're just like, she's gonna be fine. I don't think she'd eaten enough to kill any dog.
Yeah.
But I think she'd eaten enough that if she was like a chihuahua or something, she could be quite sick.
Yeah, yeah.
but they were like, yeah, she's okay. They were like, that's not going to be a problem for that dog. That's like such a tiny percent of that dog's body weight that she's eaten just like one square of chocolate.
Yeah.
I felt so bad though. I was like, I've poisoned this dog. But I also had, like, gone to great measures to not poison the dog. And also, she'd never... Nothing else I'd ever left around had got her to, like, try and get up on the counter. So she just... Obviously, these cookies smelled really good to her. She's funny.
That's my favorite story about Lily.
Smart and dumb dog.
Yeah. That and the cookie lady.
Yeah,
there was a... Oh, did you say that... used to take her to the groomer and you could hear her from, like, two blocks away?
Yes. And also there was a time we had to take her to the vet, because normally the vet did house calls for her so that we wouldn't have to take her to the vet.
Yeah.
But she had to get a tooth removed, which they couldn't do at the house. Yeah, so we had to bring her to the vet to get a tooth removed. And we left her at the vet. We felt so bad. We went to pick her up. We could hear her from the car park, from the car, without, like, windows down or doors open. We were like, oh, no. And we went in, and just did, like, this howling. And they came out like, she is sedated. This is your dog sedated. She's still this bad. But, yeah, at the groomers, you could hear her. And it would be funny, because you could hear her crying. She'd cry when you left her off at the groomers. And you could hear her crying, like, till you drove off down the block. And then when you come to pick her up, she'd be fine and happy. But the whole... shop would be covered in her hair, because they obviously have to do like the blow dryer, and there's just like crazy husky hair.
That's so cute.
Yeah, anyway, we were just talking about one particular dog rather than actually talking about the movies.
Yeah,
she's a good dog though. We can share pictures of her on social media.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think I've said pretty much everything that I like stood out, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's anything else you'd like to cover, like, I'm in for it, I'm here for it.
I don't know. I think one of the differences that I found between the two movies was the way the Twilight Bark stuff kind of worked.
Yeah.
In the animated version, it's just that Pongo and Pedita are like, okay, the humans have tried everything that they can do, now it's time for us to try something.
Yeah.
And they wait till they're at the park and then start initiating this Twilight Bark, which gets, you know, spreads this message about the missing puppies, and it gets as far as where they are, which is the place that they are is 101 kilometers away.
Of course it is.
Yeah, so they you know, they initiate this, and then as a dog, you know, at the other end, there's a dog and a cat and a horse, and I can't remember, is it the cat or the horse that says, like, oh, actually, I heard some barking up around the old DeVille place.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, well, no one's lived there for years, and they go investigate and discover the puppies are there, and then they relay the message back.
Yeah.
In the remake,
The whole thing feels implied, right?
But in the remake, the dogs in general are more proactive. So it's more like a neighborhood watch situation. Because the kind of what they say in the original is that, like, normally the Twilight Bark is just used for gossip.
Yeah.
And this is, like, the first time someone's put out, like, a bulletin like this on it. Whereas in the remake, it feels like a community watch. It feels like the dogs are all actually a community. And it starts with that dog you mentioned who knows the puppies are being taken and tries to go after Horace and Jasper, the little bulldog or whatever he was. And then, you know, we see other dogs along the way who see what's happening and are like, follow along. And it's this Airedale Terrier who just, like, apropos of nothing, like, just, you know, is watching out for them, and hears Horace and Jasper talking about killing the dogs, and is like, oh, better save these puppies, and then saves them of his own accord and brings them to a, you know, or even like when he discovers them first, he goes to like a barn and like
there's like a
implied that he tells out all the animals in the barn, and then it does get back to Pongo and Perdita, but it's not necessarily that they, you know, because you know it's not necessarily that they like put out an alert and then the dogs go, oh, let me look out for this. You know, the dogs are looking out for each other the whole way.
Yeah.
Which I thought was actually quite a nice addition to it.
Yeah.
And I do like that little Airedale Terrier that he gets in and just is like, nope, I'm the hero pup now. And rescues all the puppies.
Yeah, because it's very much a sort of like an old general and the cat in the animated one.
Mm. Yeah, and that's quite common in Disney films from around that era. Because there's also like the Aristocats has similar, Lady and the Tramp has some similar stuff. You know, with these dogs based on military ranks, and it's a weird thread through some talky animal Disney films that I guess was more prevalent back then than it maybe is now for kids. Though I did think it's funny that in the live action version they are watching the Aristocats,
and
then turn it off because it's about cats.
Yeah,
I think they watched Homeward Bound instead. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's Homeward Bound.
Some live action dog movie that they put on instead, but because
I think Milo and Otis is a like a pug and a cat.
Right.
I don't remember. I watched a lot of those types of movies when I was younger.
I don't think I really watched any of them. I did watch the animated ones though. Yeah, it's very animated films. Yeah, I don't think I watched many of those live action talking animal movies. It's not like it's something I have an awareness of, but that I wasn't really watching.
Here's a random question: talking about movies I used to watch constantly as a child, because you saw the sequel, the animated sequel, in the movie theater, right?
No, I saw the live action sequel in the movie theater.
You saw the live action sequel.
So I saw 102 Dalmatians in cinema.
Right.
101 Dalmatians 2, which is the sequel to the animated film. Was a straight to VHS movie, I think, because my memory of that, I will have seen both, but my memory of that is that it was about Patch, who was, I believe, the main character of the 90s 101 Dalmatians animated series on the Disney Channel.
Right.
So I think the sequel movie was connected to him. They also, around the same time, did a sequel to Lady and the Tramp about their son, Scamp, I think.
Those are those two words put together.
Yeah. Is that his name, Scamp?
I don't know.
I think it was called like Scamp's Big Adventures and all that. I'd had that on VHS, definitely. I remember that more so than 101 Dalmatians 2. But 101 Dalmatians 2, 101 Dalmatians, the animated series, was something that I watched quite a bit as a kid. And my memory is that the sequel animated movie was related to that TV series rather than being something that was made anywhere near the time of the actual original movie.
Right, yeah.
102 Dalmatians does still have Glenn Close in it. She comes back.
Yes, I did see that.
And they have the 102nd Dalmatian is a Dalmatian with no spots named Oddball. I remember that. But I don't know how that makes sense, because the end of the live-action 101 Dalmatians...
It's like several generations later, in the space of
2 years, the puppies have had like puppies from grand puppies and great grand puppies. I don't understand how they did that in like 2 years. It's also just irresponsible dog ownership.
Yes,
that they had 100 and you know they had 99 Dalmatian puppies and got none of them spayed or neutered and let them all just like
breed out of uncontrolled.
Yeah,
yeah. The other issue with that is like you'd have to have at least a spreadsheet to make sure that they're not related.
But you don't know which ones are related, other than your original 15.
Yeah.
They have no idea where any of the others came from, which ones were from the same litters. Like, they have no concept.
So you have to do genetic testing. Yeah, it's very complicated.
Yeah, the better option is just neuter your 99 puppies.
Yeah.
Spay or neuter your puppies.
Yeah.
And don't let them just, like, run wild breeding by themselves on a massive... field of a mansion that you just got
with your
one video game that you made.
Yeah.
Bad dog ownership.
This is where the controversy came in.
So kids.
Yeah.
If you got dogs, take care of them and love them and make sure that you're looking after them and that you know how to look after your dog.
Because I remember a story about a little girl whose parents used a very poignant technique of going, "Cole, you have to learn everything about this thing or you can't have it." And that worked for her older brother.
But unfortunately, yeah. Her older brother wanted a leopard gecko. Yeah. And the parents said, "Only if you research it." And he went, "That's too hard." And then his little sister said, "I want gerbils. I want a gerbil, I think." And the parents said, "Only if you research it." And she said, "Well, then buy me these books about gerbils." And then read everything about them. And then said, "Actually, we need more than one because they don't last well on their own. They do get lonely. They do need a partner." And then I got Sam and Frodo. And then it turned out Frodo was a girl. And then we had pups.
That's a fun story.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to get into some facts about these movies?
Yeah. I don't even remember what I've taken in. I took less down about the original, one of which was actually not really about the movies as much as it was about the book that they're based on.
Right.
So the birth of the puppies actually happened to the author. So she did have two Dalmatians who had 15 puppies.
Wow.
And one was born lifeless and her husband did revive it.
Right.
Which is a scene that happens in both movies and I think is very faithful to the original in the remake.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that isn't in part because they want to be faithful to the actual origin story. Mm. So in real life, though, they did sell most of the puppies and only kept a couple of them. This is something I thought was interesting, is that the filmmakers deliberately cast voice actors for the dogs who had deeper voices than their human owners to, like, demonstrate where the power was in the in the relationship. That dogs are the ones with the power because they've got the deeper voices.
This is the animated one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dogs don't have voices in the remake. Also, something I didn't take down, but then I thought, actually, that's kind of, you know, interesting just based on something that happened in our life recently, is that all of the dogs in the original, the animated version, the barks are done by Clarence Nash, who is the voice of Donald Duck, who we recently watched on a clip from What's My Line, which is the movie or the show that they parody in the movie with What's My Crime. So that just felt like a weird tie into our real lives. It was the first, I didn't take this down, but I remember it was the first Disney animated feature where the screenplay was written by one person. Wow. Normally it's written by multiple people. So the guy's name is Bill Peet. He was assigned to write the screenplay, but he had never learned how to type and wrote it all out by hand.
Wow.
He just wrote out the screenplay for 101 Dalmatians just entirely by hand. Which is crazy to me. that's like, my hand hurts writing like one page. Never mind. You know, if you know, theoretically a script is supposed to be one page per minute and it's, what, 79 minutes long?
Yeah.
So it's a 79-page handwritten script. Seems like a lot. For the remake, what have I taken down? So Glenn Close, despite Cruella's passion for fur coats, Glenn Close insisted that all of her costumes be made from fake fur, that there be no actual fur used in the movie.
That's good.
I already mentioned that there were 230 Dalmatian puppies and 20 adult Dalmatians during filming.
Yep.
Jeff Daniels, to get the puppies to lick him on cue, they rubbed his face with raw hot dogs. Which is just the funniest image. he also has said in interviews that on more than one occasion, while filming, he would hear like an authoritative voice on the set just shout "sit," and he would immediately sit down, and they'd have to go, "Not you, Jeff," because they're obviously talking to all the dogs. Also, Glenn Close, when she was on set in her full Cruella wig, makeup, and costume, one of the dogs, one of the adult dogs they had playing Perdita would always try and hide and run away because she was so scared of what she looked like in the costume.
Makes sense.
John Hughes, who I've just mentioned previously, wrote Home Alone. He also wrote, you know, The Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, a lot of iconic movies. This movie is the movie that he made most money from out of every movie in his career, because his contract on the movie gave him a portion of the merchandising profits.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which is what you want in a Disney movie, because there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of 101 Dalmatian merch.
Yeah.
So he's made more movie out of 101 Dalmatians than he has out of any other movie he's ever made. Also, this, something, you know, the, you see this watching the movie, but I thought it was an interesting thing to point out, is that the remake explains a plot hole from the original 101 Dalmatians, which is like, why is it that Cruella wants puppies and isn't just taking the adult dogs?
Yeah.
And it's that, you know, they mention it in the remake that the older the dog gets, the more coarse their fur becomes, and that's not as desirable or valuable in the fur industry because they want a soft fur.
Yeah.
The production designer, Ashton Gordon, created all the sets for the movie, and because of most of the, you know, the stars of the movie are puppies, they had to make like unique considerations for that. So like staircases had to be adapted to be, you know, accessible by the puppies. The sets had to be designed to be shot from a very low level because a lot of it is shot from puppy height.
Yep, yep.
And they had to, so they essentially had to do kind of what they did in Lord of the Rings, where they had to have like puppy scale sets and human scale sets.
That's very cute.
Yeah. This I just thought was interesting because we've talked about Jasper and Horace in the remake being played by Dr. Gregory House and Arthur Weasley. Two other actors who were considered to play those roles were Rupert Everett and Alfred Molina, which would have meant that instead of House and Arthur Weasley, we would have had Prince Charming and Doc Ock as Horace and Jasper. Would have been interesting to see what they did with the role. I can't imagine Alfred Molina doing the dumb, you know, slapstick acting that those two were doing. But yeah, we already talked about the rate of dog adoption, because I did take a note on that as well. And then this one is just more for myself, which is that I complained while we were watching it that in the remake there are raccoons that take over the car. Yes. And I said there's no raccoons in the UK. So someone has gone into the goof section of IMDb and put it in under incorrectly regarded as goofs, that raccoons and skunks are not native. What they've said is raccoons and skunks are not native to Britain. However, there are some feral populations there descending from animals imported for fur, which is consistent with the movie's theme.
Yep, yep.
Now, I don't know if that's what they were going for when they made it, but if it is, then, you know, fair enough.
Yeah.
That the animals who are anachronistic to me being in a place that they're not, you know, that they're not normally found, you know, the animals who were rebelling against this are the very same animals who escaped being part of the fur industry. It does actually make a lot of sense.
It does.
Yeah, I forgot to look up budget and box office for these. I feel like it's not that important.
No, 101 did... The live action one did really well.
Right.
I saw it before. It was like quite a small, but like 16, 30. I should probably just look it up. Otherwise, I'm going to start quoting
numbers. Just some random numbers. Yeah, I'll look up the original
million.
One.
60, 30 million. Where is it? I had it. I literally just had it. So the budget was 67 million,
right?
And at the box office, it made 320.7 million.
Mm.
So it was the sixth highest grossing film of 96. The top one being Independence Day.
Oh yeah.
Followed by Twister, Mission Impossible, The Rock, and The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, I do love Hunchback. The original, the 1961 one, had a budget of $4 million and made $215
million. Wow.
Yeah. But he's got a lot of re-releases.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Including, I think it was re-released in 1991, and at that point, like, surpassed a bunch of other movies. So it did, yeah, it was in cinemas quite a few times. But also, it saved the studio, from what I understand, because they were not doing so well after whatever had previously came out. I can't remember. No, I don't remember. I should know that. whatever their previous movie was, did not... Oh, Sleeping Beauty. So Sleeping Beauty was a flop. Wow. Originally, which is interesting because people consider it like one of the classics.
Yeah, yeah.
So Sleeping Beauty was a flop, and they talked about closing down the animation division of Disney. Wow. And only doing live action stuff, because they did have, you know, they did have do some weird live action stuff. Like, I think Kurt Russell got his start in Disney live action movies. So in 1960, they were like, we're going to close down animation and just focus on our live action films and these theme parks that we're now doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And there'd be no more Disney animation.
That would be a crazy alternate universe.
Yeah, alternate universe where 101 Dalmatians either wasn't made or wasn't as successful as it was.
Yeah.
It was genuinely their last shot. They were like, we'll do this one movie, and if it goes well, then we'll keep doing animation. And if it doesn't, then that's it.
It kind of reminds me of, I think we mentioned this on the Shrek episode, that when you made a mistake on Prince of Egypt, you had to go work on Shrek.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was literally referred to as getting Shrek.
Yeah, you gotta go get Shrek.
And then it's funny because no one remembers Prince of Egypt.
Prince of Egypt is a stunning film.
Yes, it is gorgeous. It looks fantastic.
But it definitely didn't become like a franchise Shrek did. Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly. It's not in the zeitgeist to the same extent.
It did not go into pop culture like... Yeah. Shrek has.
Prince of Egypt is a fantastic film, though.
Yeah.
Kids, if you're watching, get your parents to show you Prince of Egypt.
Yeah. And if you're listening...
Very beautiful film, and it's got lovely music, and it's very cool. And it does teach you about the Bible, so if depending on your belief system, you might not want to watch that. But it is very good. It's a very well-made movie.
And for the adults in the room, if you go down to our show notes, you can find a link to our Discord, our website, ittakes2.co.nz, mm-hmm. where you can join our mailing list. That's my call to action.
Join our mailing list is the call to action?
Yeah.
Okay. I would prefer if people gave us reviews.
Yeah, that's true.
Do something. No, you know, actually, I don't care about giving us reviews. Yeah.
Share
this episode or your favorite episode or, and you know, whatever you like about the podcast, share it with someone. It doesn't have to be share it like publicly or share it, you know, to all your followers or all your family and friends on social media. Just like, if you
convert the episodes and URL into a QR code and then mail it to a stranger.
That would be really fun, actually, to do. No, just like, you know, if you enjoyed this episode or if you've enjoyed any of our episodes, just share it with a person who you think would enjoy it. Just go, oh, this person likes this movie or this person likes
podcasts
or talking Irish about this people. Topic. This person likes listening to Kiwi accents. Share with one person or more, I think that would be my call to action, is just share.
Tell your mom about us.
Yeah, I mean, my mom loves us.
Yeah, she does.
She does.
And she also likes the podcast. She also tolerates the podcast.
She likes listening to the podcast while she's driving, actually, nowadays. Except for one episode that she thought didn't sound really good in her car. But I think we did have tech issues on that episode. So that was...
Sounds accurate.
Because she used to tell me she listened to us while she was going to sleep, and we put her to sleep, which doesn't feel as good. Yeah. But also I understand it.
She also said that our soft speaking and then jumping straight into laughter used to jolt her awake.
As yeah, true. That's not the way you want it. If you want to listen to a podcast, go to sleep. My go-to is the empty bowl, which is a bad breakfast cereal.
Mine is the continuous mechanical sound of a fan.
Oh, I thought you were going to say horror podcast 109 or whatever it's called.
Random number generator horror podcast number 9.
Yeah, no, you don't listen to that to go to sleep?
No, I have not listened to that in a while, but I should. Yeah, I should. It's kind of you're in for a long journey with that one.
Right, right. I don't think I've ever listened to an entire episode of The Empty Bowl. I think they just put me to sleep straight away.
Fair.
But I think that's part, like, I think they're happy with that. Because okay. They play, like, soothing sounds over it and stuff.
Fair enough. Anyway. Thank you for joining us on this little adventure. More awaits in the near future.
Yeah, we're doing a couple of Disney remake episodes, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, get ready for some more Disney episodes coming up.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.